Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Today on the program, we take a look at the offseason for the Oregon Ducks and what the offense will look like moving forward. The program starts now. And welcome into the program, Dusty Hera, Cole Linehan, and the offseason rolls on. How are you, my man?
I'm good, you know, just I'm glad we're still here, glad we're still talking Ducks. Yep. You know, we've worked through a great season, and now it's kind of fun to talk about what's next, I guess. You know, there's a lot going on, and recruiting, and the transfer portal, and we're still playing football, so a lot of good things.
What does the offseason look like for a player, though, at the Division I level? Because, like, for so many weeks, and as you kind of chug through this season, like, you're football, obviously student-athlete. Mm-hmm. But what was that like for you guys to then all of a sudden just be students again?
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround because, you know, we're a term school at Oregon, right? And so a lot of times the winter term will start right after New Year's. Mm-hmm. And so we will be with the team practicing. They give us like a window to go home, maybe right before the bowl game, and then you were required to get down there. And then you'd play in the bowl game, you'd have like 1 or 2 days, depending on, you know, how late the bowl game was, and then you would head yourself back to the University of Oregon. And then it would just be, you just kind of settle into the offseason. Like you said, you know, you would take more credits. You know, you usually take about 12 credits during the fall. During the winter, you take 16, you know, just kind of on that game plan of being there for 5 years and always still having summer too, because guys would be there for the summer. And so you'd have to take an extra class, which was fun, of course. If you had grade issues, you'd have to be on a study table. You'd have to get 8 hours of study table if you were below a certain GPA. And then you just, you know, I would always have surgery. That was a big one for me.
Yeah,
you know,
just time that up right around spring ball action.
Just have an off-season surgery, take care of your body. And then it's just, you know, you work out. That's when our strength coaches, you know, I know Radcliffe's not there anymore with the
Coach
football.
Coach Love.
So that's where Coach Love is going to spend a lot of time with his guys. You know, he'll bring them in at least 4 times a week. They will do all kinds of different workouts. It'll be like almost like a bulking period, right? You maintain during the season, and then now it's time to start putting, you know, growth and putting on muscle and doing all the things because you have the time, right? And your body's not beat up. It's super hard. If you tried to put on muscle in a football season, it is impossible because you were just trying to survive at that point. And so, yeah, you just, you know, they would always do, Bilotti would always have Friday morning 6 a.m. workouts.
Mat drills.
Apparently, Thursday nights in a college town are pretty eventful, which they were trying to have us avoid by waking us up at 6 a.m. on a Thursday night. I have a great story about that once, because we were in the dorms, and I won't mention his name, but we had a teammate that liked to party, loved to party. And he would not let Bilotti's rules get in his way of that.
Oh, no.
And so we were leaving the dorms, and it was like 5:30 in the morning, because we were always so stressed out about being late. And he is walking in from the night, like, had not slept, had not, just he said, hey, guys, where are you going? I'm like, dude, we're going to workouts. It's Friday morning. He's like, oh, man, can I get a ride? So he jumped in the car with us, and he is still drunk. I mean, still just out of his mind, and he goes through the whole workout. You know, he was a true champion that day. But afterwards, he's like, yeah, I mean, I shouldn't do that anymore. But he didn't make it eventually. He only made it his freshman year. He had a bit of a party problem. But it was, yeah, I'll never forget that. Just us pulling out, like, dude, where are you guys going? Like, we're going to workouts. And so, you know, it's just, we always talk when you are on a football season, like, I wonder what it'd be like to be a normal student, you know? And so you get a little feel for that. I mean, you're still very controlled. They'll probably bring you in for meetings and you do other things, but your coaches are gone a lot recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see them on the weekends and then they'll ask you to be a host for a recruit. And so,
which might be one of the most important jobs on a football team,
yes,
is being a good host to recruits on a recruiting weekend.
Yeah, they try to match you up with somebody that you can relate to, or somebody that's from your, like, if you're from your town, or, you know, it was always good for us too because they give us a little money. And who knows what it's like now?
Right? Yeah, I don't even know what because the recruiting calendar is, mm-hmm, so different. Where most of these guys are signing in December,
yeah,
and they're working more towards like wrapping up the class of 2025 with whomever is unsigned still, which is very few of the high end players.
Yeah.
But it's more portal guys in the class of 2026 that they're recruiting now.
Yeah, and so that's, I mean, that was the thing with us with recruiting trips is you'd set it up, right? Like we liked it because we got to go to a nice dinner and it, you know, we'd go to the electric station. RIP.
RIP electric station.
I don't know if maybe they have a nice place over there, but that was always cool because you could order whatever you want. And I can remember my recruiting trip where I was sitting next to DP, Coach Don Pelham, and I was like, ah, he was like, what do you get? I was like, I don't know, maybe the lobster or the steak, you know? And he's like, hey, get both. I was like, okay, you know? And so the hosts got to have that too. And then it was just kind of they tried to match you up with people that were like-minded maybe. And like if a high school kid wanted to have a good time, they'd try to put you with somebody that was going to show them a good time. If you were a high school kid that they knew wasn't into any type of college partying scene or any type of, like, you know, after hours thing, you know, at night, then you would just, you'd lock them in with a player on the team that was more into just, you know, going to movies or, yep, or doing something fun. And so that's what there was an art to being a host.
It is an art, and it is on the coaching staff too to make sure the recruiting staff,
yeah,
to pair guys up and find those like-minded interests or what they want. I'll never forget when I was in college at Southern Oregon, we got a phone call and we had a guy who was very religious and it was going to be, he had more of the low-key guys. He calls me and he goes, hey, we've got one that is, he's going rogue on me. I need you to take him. I said, I got you.
Yeah.
Down different paths. Yeah. And this kid was a Mormon kid.
Yeah.
And they thought, hey, we're just going to have a quiet night. He did not want to have a quiet night. And so sometimes that happens.
Yeah, it's funny.
Recruiting trips. You have to have a trade. You have to facilitate trades.
I have seen that before too, where, you know, on the surface, everything looks like he is just buttoned up and ready to just, you know, hang out at the movies or go bowling. And then you get there, and the kid had different ideas.
He had way different plans.
You know, just like you adjust on the fly on the football field, well, you adjust on the fly in a recruiting trip, and you make sure you show him a good time. But yeah, it's funny because depending on where you're from, like, I remember all the Polynesians, right? Like, if we were bringing a Polynesian kid in from anywhere, like, they would absolutely just put them in a house with all the Polynesians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do. They just hang out in the house all together. Yep. Like, they wouldn't really go out and do anything, but they just loved it. Like, it was just, that was part of their culture, it was part of what they did. And they would just, you'd go into this house and there'd be a ton of Polys and they would just be hanging out. And that was their, and they loved it, man. That was it. And they all lived together. Every single Polynesian dude on our team lived together. I think it was like eight of them in a five bedroom, and that was what they wanted. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, it's, you know, off season was fun. You got a couple more weekends. You'd go out, hang out with your friends or do whatever. You go home on occasion, maybe see your family, and just kind of decompress a little bit. But it wasn't like we had time off,
yeah,
you know? I mean, we had Friday morning workouts, but we still had to come back that night and lift.
Yep.
And so it wasn't an opportunity to just, you know, not get better. But
well, this is the point of the offseason that Oregon is in right now. And when you mentioned like that lifting, you mentioned everybody that played in the 80s, 90s, or early 2000s, they all talk about Coach Radcliffe.
Yes.
And how he met. What was his support staff like? Because you look at Oregon's sports performance, whether it's, you know, Wilson Love, and then there's he's the guy that is the face because he's the strength coach. Mm-hmm. They've got a whole horde of people that are working in sports performance now. It's a lot different.
It is a lot different. And they're just football.
Yep.
You know, that was the thing about Radcliffe, and he was the man. And you have asked anybody who played at the University of Oregon from 1980 to 2008, or actually later than that, he followed Chip too, but they would be the person you talk about, right? And but he also did track and he did basketball at times, and so all of his support staff they all helped. They were all in on football because we were such a big team, but they all had their own teams. They had women's lacrosse, they had baseball, they had all these other things. But there would be a group of people that when we were in there, there would always be probably four or five coaches in there. But they were all over the place. I mean, Coach Rad. The reason why everybody loves Coach Rad so much to this day and would do anything for the man is because we knew he'd do anything for us, right? And he is the most consistent person I have ever met. You know what you're going to get. You know he's going to always be there. You know he's not going to ever, like, if you ask him a question, then you know the answer to it, right? He never wavers on anything that he's ever told you.
You know, that's one of the things that you hear, like when the old timers will get in and they'll say, what is the most important thing you can do as a staff? And it's like, well, first, it's your coordinator hires, because those are guys who call in the plays, and they form the identity of what your team's going to be under your head coach's mindset, right? After that, it's the strength coach.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy that develops their bodies, keeps your guys healthy for the most part, but he's the one that has the most contact with the guys of any coach, because you mentioned it. At this point in the year, most of the time, position coaches, coordinators, they're off recruiting. And that's what they got to be going city to city, state to state, and they are gone a lot. The strength coach is there the entire time, but he's also there during fall camp, during every practice, all throughout the entire year. And he's the guy that can communicate even during the down times of football. He's the one that's going to be there. And that's when, you know, we don't like to bring up the bad times very often, but remember, that was like the biggest red flag early in Willie Taggart's tenure at Oregon, was when the strength coach came in. You had all of those guys getting, it's not compartment syndrome, but it's whatever that, mm-hmm. you know, overuse calcium deposits in your muscles or whatever. When that happened, it was like, this is not off to a good start, because that should be your third most important hire on your entire staff after your offense and defensive coordinators.
And two, that it was like everybody knew what they had with Radcliffe, and then they came in and they just wiped away everything that they were doing. They brought in their own guys, and he wasn't even a certified strength coach and all kinds of things. But to your point, no, we spend the most time with with our strength coach, and we see him every single day. You know, and we see on game weeks, he's the last person we see before we go to sleep. He does bed check during during fall camp. He would do checks at that. Sometimes he would hang out. You know, everybody has their Radcliffe stories about fall camp, but guys would sometimes sneak out because we used to be in the dorms, you know, during fall camp, and guys would try to sneak out and go out, and he would sometimes be in the trees watching us. And he was
in the trees.
Yeah, one time, I'll never forget it. He was like literally lurking in a tree, and he's like, "Where are you guys going?" And it was like, "Oh, just getting some air," you know, like. And so, but he was like that. We had an upstairs area mezzanine that we would work out. We would warm up in, excuse me. And you know, sometimes when you don't have eyes on, you might half-ass a warm up. And he would climb up above the weights and be standing in the corner of the weight room on top of the power clean platform areas. So he had a vision on us, and he'd be like, "Start over," because he would just catch us. You know, he'd catch us not doing it the right way. But, you know, those are the guys. You need to have the most dependable, loving, caring strength coach you could possibly have, because that's where guys are going to go to a lot of times. Because when you have an issue and you need an adult to step in, your position coach might be on the road. He might be on a plane somewhere, and your strength coach is so important for that.
That's why I thought it was really cool that Ducks versus them in the preseason as we were going through training camp and everything like that, and everybody was getting ready for the season as collectively we couldn't get enough of Oregon football throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
They highlighted, you know, Coach Love, the strength staff, cool. and did an entire episode where he was kind of the epicenter of it. So this is where Oregon is right now. They are in the throes of the off season, and Oregon still has some holes to fill on this roster, whether it is through the transfer portal, whether it is finishing up the class of 2025, or improving what is the number one recruiting class in the country for the class of 2026. Can't believe they already have the grades on that, but already number one in the country for 2026. This staff is really busy, so they're in the weight room, and they're getting it done. I'm sure it's even more difficult now for that strength coach, building those relationships, keeping those relationships, that the portal is open for Oregon, right? Because there's that window once the season gets over that, boom, you've got guys that could be coming or going. He may be the reason why some of these guys stick around the Oregon programs, because he's in their ear all the time. Let's talk about where the roster stands. We'll go through the offense and the defense and special teams over the next couple of weeks. Let's start with the offense. We'll get to that after this. Where the roster stands, we'll be going through this over the next couple of weeks, offense, defense, and special teams. Where we got to start, let's start on the offensive side of the ball. And, Cole, there are a lot of departures from what was an explosive, efficient, and really dang good offense throughout the course of the 2024 season.
Yeah. Yeah, you look at this list, and we're going to go through it. But there's definitely some holes to fill.
Yeah. I mean, and it all starts at quarterback. And I don't think that you can understate enough how important the acquisition and addition of Dylan Gabriel was for this season, especially coming off of two phenomenal seasons with Bo Nix that really jump-started the Dan Lanning era at the University of Oregon in Bo, not just sticking around for those two seasons, but going through a coordinator change as well when Kenny Dillingham goes down to Arizona State. But to bring in Dylan Gabriel for year three, knowing that it was going to be a one-year rental and you're not sure what you're going to get, boy, they knocked it out of the park with that 1 year that they got out of Dylan Gabriel.
They did. And they do a couple things when you bring a guy like that, right? When you bring an established quarterback in that we know throws a good ball, gets the ball to his receivers, that's also going to bring in receivers, right? That's going to bring in people from the portal that want to play with a guy like that. And so, it did two things. One, it brought us in more. It gave us, it established a quarterback that we knew was going to be our guy, you know, that was a high percentage thrower, just like Bo Nix. But it also gave an opportunity for Dante Moore to take a year and to develop. You know, he got thrown in at UCLA as a true freshman. You know, he took his lumps. He came to Oregon. He got to learn from a really good quarterback that's been playing in college football for 15 years, you know, and then he hopefully is now given the keys with, you know, a lot of guys behind him pushing him. But, you know, that is the thing. We're going to be a completely different team under center next year, just with, you know, we're not going to have the guy that completes the ball 75% of the time, but we will have a really good quarterback that make a ton of plays.
Well, for the last 2 years, you've had a quarterback that has started at least 50 games in college football. Experience matters. And look at what Bo Nix is doing on Sundays now in the NFL. I mean, make no bones about it. You think of all of the quarterbacks that come out of the draft early, right? And they said, and it's like, well, you're going to have to watch him grow, and he hasn't seen everything. At the point of where Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel were with college football, there's nothing they hadn't seen. Whether it was both of them playing in, you know, different conferences where you get different looks and different styles. But when you play and you start 50-plus games, the kitchen sink's been thrown at you. Mm-hmm. And you saw that development for guys who have been 4-year, or in Bo Nix's case, 5-year starters in college football, when they go to the NFL, that helps them because they've seen so much more of the game of football. Where Oregon's going to be at now is at a point where Dante Moore has started football games. He's played a lot of college football. But I can't say it enough. That young man swallowing his pride and knowing he was going to come to Oregon and take a backseat and redshirt a year. When you're the 5-star, you know, everybody wants you coming out of high school where he's from, Detroit, to take that 1 year to sit back and say, I'm going to learn. I'm going to take as much as I can from Dylan Gabriel. I'm going to learn as much as I can from Will Stein. And I'm going to be ready for when my chance comes. I think that is huge. I also think with Dylan Gabriel not just being that stopgap for Dante Moore, the fact that you said receivers want to come and play for a guy like Dylan Gabriel, receivers will want to come in an offense, too, where the system proves it's not just with one quarterback, because that was the big thing. Is it just Bo Nix? No, you go from Bo Nix to Dylan Gabriel. Two guys have been wildly successful with their receivers, and then you saw guys like Tez Johnson take a step forward this year. You saw growth in guys after Bo Nix leaves, and I think that's important. But with Dante Moore, who I think a lot of people believe will be the heir apparent and be the guy who will start, he's going to get pushed because Austin Novosad, a guy that when Will Stein was hired at Oregon, they needed to get a quarterback in that recruiting class. They went and they got Austin Novosad from Dripping Springs, Texas, which is in Will Stein's backyard where he was at UTSA. Dripping Springs is like a suburb of Austin and kind of in between Austin and San Antonio. So you go and you get Austin Novosad. He's more of a traditional pocket passer, big arm. But then behind him, the true freshman who redshirted this year in Luke Moga, who is a speedster, 100-meter champion out of the state of Arizona. He's got that kind of speed. He's got like 10.7 speed. I think he won the 100 meters at, I think it was like 10.5 in the state of Arizona. He's got legit speed. And then a familiar name in incoming freshman, Akili Smith Jr. Those are kind of the four guys that have the leg up on the competition. I believe they're going to have, in total, I think six quarterbacks with a couple of walk-ons too, and Mark Weipert from Wilsonville High School, who's a Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Oregon this past year from Wilsonville High School. They're going to have bodies, but I think those four kind of stand out over everybody else, and you want to talk about big shoes to fill. Dylan Gabriel's shoes are enormous.
Yeah, but just going through those names, that just gives you comfort right there, right? You have not only you have five-star guys all over the place, but you have some young talent that is – and it, you know, they always say, right, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be in that room where they're going to be grinding away. They're going to be doing everything they can to start. You know, and that's the thing about quarterback. It's not like you're sharing reps at quarterback. Yeah. The two-quarterback system has never worked. We tried it, and it never, ever works, right? You need to have one voice in that huddle leading your guys. And, you know, like I said, Dante Moore seems like the guy, but you just never know how those freshmen are going to develop. Right. And especially too, when you have a complex offense and you have somebody who wants to really throw everything at you, your football IQ plays a big role.
Yep.
You might have the biggest arm in the room, but if you can't follow along on the X's and O's and really see how this offense is truly supposed to work, then you're going to have problems. Even Dylan Gabriel, it's asking a lot of a quarterback to come in 1 year and really get concepts down. And as the season went on, you can feel how he got more and more comfortable because he had the time in the meeting rooms and the practice, and he got to see the offense where it was supposed to actually be played.
In the running back room, this is going to be an interesting one. I mean, as we record this, and some news will probably break, and this will be really dated by Monday when this Monday morning at 6 a.m. when this podcast comes out. But as it stands right now, the running back room, the only loss right now is Jordan James, who is gone and off to the NFL. And more power to him because of the season that he had and the workload that he had. He was outstanding for the Oregon Ducks this year. But here's where it may get dated. No Whittington. His status is still up in the air, and he's an interesting one. This is a guy who's played 5 years of college football. Only four games in 2023 due to the knee injury suffered against Colorado. As we know, if you're not familiar with it, you get four games and you can redshirt.
Yep.
Okay, so he could have a redshirt. His freshman year was also 2020, which COVID-19.
Yeah.
So there is a year still available for Noah Whittington. We haven't heard anything one way or another. I think one thing we should say is silence means he'll be back for another
year. Yeah, I mean, that's
year.
The thing. I feel like the NCAA just gives people years if they ask for it now, right?
And we'll get to that with the defensive side with Bryce Betcher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so there is – if you have a COVID year attached to you at all, I feel like the NCAA just says, okay, just have a year. But, you know, yeah, Jordan James leaving, I mean, running back's life, you know, shelf life is shorter than some.
It's limited, man.
And when you're taking hits and you're, you know, getting the ball like that as much as he was, you know, and he's probably seeing how with some success that we're having at running back.
Lucky Irving,
right? I mean, that's, you see, you know, it's a little different now because when you're a guy like that, you're almost surprised that he leaves just because there's so much money to stay. You know, Bo Nix hit it out of the park, right? He stuck around because he was maybe going to be a third round pick, you know, and he's going to make a whole lot more money in Eugene sticking around. But then he ended up getting drafted and he played the playoffs today. So, but yeah, the running back room, I think the pressure is not as intense as it was when you had to really build a roster from freshman up. Right now it's like we know we got to go get running backs. Yep. And so those coaches are out there hitting that portal, and then you go to the portal and say, hey guys, you want to come to the University of Oregon with a stacked team, and we just have one position that we're uncertain about, and it might be running back.
Yeah.
And then those top running backs are like, sign me up.
And that's what they did. They went and they got one of the top running backs, if not the top running back in the entire transfer portal, Mekhi Hughes out of Tulane, 1,000-yard rusher. Helps that his brother is one of the top safeties in the country, Naeem Offord, who's coming to the University of Oregon as a true freshman. That is going to be a huge addition because you have experience in that backfield. And look, Jordan James leaving for the NFL, that he is going to be a good back wherever he lands next. I think the running back room, though, is in a good spot because when you get Mekhi Hughes coming in, if Noah Whittington sticks around, you know you have a 1-2 punch there. But I think one thing that Oregon has done a very good job of with recruiting the running back room is they have variety, right? You have a big power back, Jay Harris, the Northwest Missouri State transfer from D2 that came in. We saw him in one game this year. He is a load. He is big, you know, big-shouldered, run between the tackles type running back. Jaden Lamar, who we've seen in spots over the last two seasons in the backfield. He is kind of a Swiss Army knife type back. And then you got Dink Riggs, who one might be one of my favorite names, but he is a small, shifty back. DeJuan Riggs, the freshman out of Washington, D.C. I think we saw him against Illinois, where I think he scored a touchdown. Yeah. Against Illinois, Dink Riggs is going to be a shifty, you know, scat back type that is an explosive player. And then you go and where you traditionally recruit and where you still build your roster, right, is with high school recruits.
Yeah.
The portal's great, but you still build through traditional recruits. Riggs was one. Jaden Lamar was one. Jordan James was one. Well, four-star recruit Jordan Davison out of Mater Dei down in Southern California, one of the best backs on the West Coast. He's going to be kind of the freshman that comes in. You see, if he can compete in year one, he is an explosive running back. Everybody extremely high on him in the recruiting world. So they have depth in that backfield.
They do. And I feel like the running back position, I've never been concerned about.
We always,
if you talk about running backs at Oregon, you could talk about absolute football players, right? And, you know, you look at just that room. We lost Jordan James. He's going to have a great career in the NFL, but we have a ton of dudes we can give the ball to. And if you're good up front and you all of a sudden you turn around and you give the best athlete in the room the ball, good things are going to happen, right? And so when I look at that room, I just kind of gloss over and say we're going to be okay because that's how I've always looked at our running backs. Now, when you get to the receivers,
it's a little different.
It's a little different, right? Because one thing you have to have receivers more so than running backs is depth. Because you got to have guys, you can say, you know, Ohio State has shown us. It's really important to have a ton of receivers that you can get the ball to, right? And we lost a couple good ones this year that we're obviously on the search. I know we have a couple transfers coming in, but, you know, to lose a guy like Tez, who was absolutely our kind of security blanket and this guy we go to and, you know, has been so good for us for a couple years now, to lose a guy like him, you know, Trayshon Holden had his games for us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's up in the air a lot there. And that's something that you need to have a room full of guys that can get you downfield and break the top off the defense to really, you know, put yourself in a situation to win.
And that's why I think it's huge that Evan Stewart announced he will return. He's going to be back because in coming back for another year from Evan Stewart is going to be big for development all the way around that entire room and kind of bolstering everybody around him. We're still unsure, just like with Noah Whittington, Gary Bryant Jr. struggled through injuries this past year. He could get a sixth season from the NCAA, and if that does happen or he chooses to come back, that would be even bigger for this Oregon team that we expected Gary Bryant to play a huge role in this Oregon offense this year. Unfortunately for him, injuries made it so that wasn't a factor. Outside of that, look, you mentioned how important it is to have those game-breaking receivers. Sometimes they can be true freshmen, just like Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. Not saying this young man's going to be Jeremiah Smith, but if you've seen anything on DeCorian Moore, the wide receiver out of Duncanville High School, I think he was the player of the game in the Under Armour All-American game this past, 2 weeks ago. He is a twitchy, long, explosive receiver. Him coming in as a true freshman, with the way that this room is kind of shaping up, you do expect a guy like him to be playing and get significant run as a true freshman. Outside of that, Malik Benson, the Florida State and Alabama transfer, most recently from Florida State, he'll be on school number 3 coming up to Eugene. He is one of those Tez-esque receivers stylistically, except for he hasn't produced like Tez did at Troy before coming to the University of Oregon. He is a big play receiver, small, can run that underneath that crossing route that you love to see from Will Stein. He's twitching fast enough to do all that. He comes in through the transfer portal. You have an early enrollee in Cooper Perry, who was there for some of the bowl practices. He's a high-level recruit, 4-star kid. But the guys that are coming back, I think you have talent. But where's that growth going to be from guys like Kyler Casper, who ended the year with an injury, Justice Lowe, who we saw grow so much over the course of this past season, Jeremiah McClellan, Jurion Dickey, and Dylan Gresham. Those are guys that we've kind of heard a lot about. Expectations are starting to come up on them, and because it's their turn to enter that receiver room. And one thing that Junior Adams has done a phenomenal job with, he has developed talent everywhere he's gone at that position, and you're going to have to kind of see that growth factor from that room, because just with the Tez and Trayshawn being gone, those are two major absences. Evan Stewart being back, that's huge. Yeah. High-level recruit like DeCorian Moore, big. But where does the rest of it go? Because you need that wealth of options in the receiver room.
And you love it when guys can build within, right?
Yeah.
When you can develop them as a young pup and work their way up. You know, it's fun to get a new toy, you know, a new guy coming in. Is maybe it's just third school that's had some success, right? But the best are when guys, you see the development every single year. And like I even say in high school, right, in high school football, somebody's always going to surprise you. Somebody who's not on your radar, or maybe is on your radar, but they, you know, exceed expectations, that's going to happen every single year. Because we talked about the offseason. Now these guys are putting in work. And these guys, you know, some of the guys, maybe they were sitting back or didn't have the roles they wanted. Some of them left and maybe wanted to hit the portal and see if the grass was green on the other side. Those ones that stayed are now putting in the work and doing everything possible that they cannot be taken off the field. And so there are going to be some guys that pop. And the receiver core is going to be a huge one for us. Obviously, with the development of a new quarterback, they're going to be getting a ton of time in. And I'm looking forward to seeing that crew.
Well, it also hurts when the greatest receiving tight end in program history is gone. And Terrence Ferguson, that tight end room is going to go through some changes as well, with T. Ferg and Patrick Herbert, and old reliable, as Georgie likes to call him. Those two gone to graduation and incredible careers. I think when you look at that room, though, you have that optimism. And this does take, and this is the importance of the tight end position, because we'll sandwich them right in between. We're talking about receivers and when we talk about offensive line, because they can alleviate a lot of the pressure for both of those position groups based on the skill set that they bring to the field. And with that receiver room getting a little bit of a breath, is that you don't need to have 4 dominant receivers on the field when you can add a tight end or 2 tight ends, right?
In the Rose Bowl, we had 3 at times.
No doubt about it. And Kenyon Sadiq coming back, that is a huge boost to that room. And we saw the growth of him in the kind of coming out party that he had in the Big Ten championship game. And they tried to feature him a little bit more as the season grew on this past year. I think expectations are insanely high for a guy like Kenyon Sadiq. But you have a freshman this past year in Roger Saliapaga, who is listed in some as a wide receiver. He is insanely big for being a true freshman this past year. You talk about bulk season being this point in the weight room. He has every opportunity to come in and just blow everybody's mind come spring ball and say, wait, who is that?
Yeah.
Because he put some more weight on. He could be a true, you know, inline and outside type tight end for the Oregon Ducks. He's a great receiving threat already, but, you know, he is a guy that expectations should be growing for Roger Saliapaga. They do go to the portal, and they got a guy in Jamari Johnson out of Louisville who's one of the most highly regarded tight ends in this portal class. That is a good one to have. And then you sprinkle in guys like A.J. Pugliano from North Medford, who is a freshman this year, and then true freshman Vander Ploeg. That tight end room, they're building forward, and we're seeing kind of the fruits of those labors. You're recruiting forward. This is what we talk about, stacking recruiting classes. I think that tight end room is going to be really dang good next year. Sadiq, Saliapaga, and Johnson.
Yeah, and it's going to be a different look, right, with Sadiq, because you could do so much more. I mean, he's somebody that could absolutely break the top off of a defense if you need to. And he's just going to be the biggest freak on the field a lot of times, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's tough to lose a guy like Ferguson that was so productive. But looking at that room right there, I mean, you know, obviously it's going to be the feature will be Sadiq, but there is going to be some guys that are plug and play, and we will see multiple tight end sets next year with that crew.
Big losses to the offensive line, and this is one where recruiting they've recruited forward and done a really good job, and this is where Mario Cristobal really kind of laid the groundwork of no offensive linemen, high-level recruits, come to the University of Oregon. Mario Cristobal did a good job of kind of laying the groundwork for that. Alik Terry has done in under Dan Lanning. They've done a great job of keeping true to that and building forward on that. But make no mistake, the losses of Josh Connerly, Ajani Cornelius, Marcus Harper, and Nashad Strother, those are big losses to an offensive line that was one of the best in college football this past year.
Yeah, no, that's the first thing I go to, and many people would probably do that as well. You know, you'd love to have those big name athletes that get you, you know, get you downfield and score a lot of touchdowns, but the first thing you need to look at is the offensive line, and that's where we struggled against Ohio State, right? And so when you know you're losing a ton of studs, you just got to hope and pray that they're locked in on that portal and that they've also developed. I mean, that's the thing they have when back in the day. They would try to bring an X amount of O-linemen in every year, but they also had the idea that those O-linemen would stay, right? And so there would be a huge recruiting class. Like my freshman year was a recruiting class where they were like, we need to bring in as many offensive linemen as we can. So they brought in the Max Ungers. They brought in the Jeff Schwartz. They brought in the Aaron Clovises, the Jeff Kendalls, you know, that Mark Lewis's. They, you know, there was like Jake Hucko. There were six guys that came in as a fresh that they thought could play early, you know, and they had those surprises. You know, Schwartz was such a massive human, and we've had him on the pod before, and he had a great career early where he played as a true freshman. You know, we had the Max Unger that redshirted, but everybody knew was going to be the best O lineman in the room. Right? They didn't know that early, right? But he, you know, they saw it pretty quickly, but they knew that the development was there, right? And so it's. And then sometimes they'll bring in two guys because they are so stacked. And so it's a little different now. And I know they've done a good job of having guys in waiting. You know, you look at that room all year. Well, when somebody went down, they had the bodies, especially at like tackle, to put in there. We were a little, you know, we had some issues in the interior line.
Because there was a string of injuries early in the
year.
And you look at the guys that are coming back, whether, you know, Poncho Alolu comes back and he'll be having the brain of your offensive line back for another year in your center position, that is huge. But the string of injuries that kind of led to the upheaval early in the year at the offensive line, all three of those guys are going to be back. Matthew Bedford is expected to be back, a guy, the Indiana transfer who many assumed would just slot into that starting job at right guard. And we never saw him this year. Dave Iuli, who returned from injury and it ended up sharing that starting spot with Tavika Rogers as the season went on. And Marcus Harper was not the guy in the Rose Bowl, right? Yeah. In late in the year, because Iuli and Rogers came in and they played so well. You talk about that development. Janoris Wilson and George Silva, guys that they've been really high on, you know, now is going to be their time. Enormous human beings. They're like 6'8", 6'9". Yeah. They're huge. We saw Janoris Wilson catch that that 2-point conversion Like, who was that against? Night game. I just remember it was back-to-back. It was right after the Jordan Birch fake punt goes up. And then they ended up scoring. And then, boom, you get the two-point conversion.
That's right. The double big man score,
yeah.
Whatever it was.
We have those two guys on the outside going to the portal. The number one offensive tackle, Isaiah World out of University of Nevada, Reno. He ends up committing. The number nine tackle, Alex Harkey out of Texas State. He ends up committing out of the portal. So you're adding that depth, and all of a sudden we're looking at numbers where already we've just named eight guys that can play on that offensive line right now. That's where you start saying, all right, where's that depth being built to? Because they have brought in high-level guys like Fox Crater and Trent Ferguson and Devin Brooks, who all redshirted this past year. Look, that is where you say, all right, it's a big O-line room. And that it doesn't even mention the high-caliber recruits, David Utu, who they brought in, who's a four-star guy. Staskowski from Central Catholic High School, another four-star kid. And then Zaire Addison, an interior offensive lineman. Like, they're bringing in that recruiting class to add to that depth, and you hope that the law firm, as they call them, right, with Terry, Kavanaugh, and Walk, those guys can end up developing that talent up front.
It'd be interesting to see, like, looking at it in a couple years when you talk about the portal and guys leaving, as far as where the O-linemen fall into that. Because, you know, I would think that there would be less guys leaving, because you get into a group of guys that you really kind of commit to, and there's no closer set of guys than the O-line, right? They spend as much time together as possible. They're all very similar in what they, you know, view life and the way they do things. And they also have to depend on each other for their success, right? And so when you leave, or somebody leaves the portal, it's not like you're just leaving the receiver position and that could be easily filled. You're leaving a hole that people were relying on you to fill.
Yeah, and I think the one guy that has entered the portal was Jaquan McCroy, who was, remember, he was kind of back and forth between Oregon and Colorado at signing day, and he ended up transferring to Arkansas. But I think you're right, because, look, yeah, one, you got to be a different breed,
yep.
And two, you develop such a relationship in that room that it truly is unique to any other of the position groups. But the offensive line, big holes, and this is where development, and this is the uncertainty of going into an offseason. And Oregon is far away from being the only team that has to go through this. But I think if you followed that program along, you look at the main guys that are leaving, and those are some massive shoes to fill at every single position group, whether it is Dylan Gabriel at quarterback, Jordan James at running back, Terrence Ferguson at tight end, Tez Johnson at receiver, Josh Connerly on the offensive line. I mean,
yeah,
all of them massive, massive shoes to fill. But this is where talent development, it's got to mean something, and you got to do it.
And what I also look at, too, in the offseason is what coaches we keep, you know. And that's another thing. We've talked about all that or the offensive yeah. day. But when you have a really successful season and you have groups that do really well, then you start wondering where are coaches going? Right. And then it's like the domino effect. If one coach leaves to another school, then the coaching circles are so small that they might be somehow attached to that guy that got a head job somewhere else, and he pulls three guys to go be coordinators or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah, just look at what happened when Lanning got the job at Oregon. Right. It was immediately Tosh LePoy's like, yep, I'm going with him. Mm-hmm. Marshall Malkow, you know, the on the recruiting side was like, yep, I'm leaving A&M. I'm coming up to Oregon. Kenny Dillingham didn't need to even ask. He was already on the way.
Yeah.
Like, guys will flock in because you develop those relationships and you grow with those guys. And there's certain cliques of coaches that say, if he ever gets a job, I'm going to go yeah. coach with him.
And that's where it's really important now, and Oregon's doing a good job, is just paying their coaches, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, Will Stein will not take a lower-level head coaching job unless he just wants to be a head coach, because he's still making way more than he would to be a head coach, to be an offensive coordinator at Oregon. And so that does help retain coaches, is to pay them well. And, you know, going to the Big Ten, we have to probably match all of those guys that make that kind of money.
But not relying on the PERS system, the public employee retirement system, which was a gravy train that kept a lot of good coaches around Oregon for a long time. But Tier 1 is long gone.
Tier 1 is long gone, so they're not making 100% of their highest salaries, you know, for the rest of their lives it is. But, you know, this is kind of the wait-and-see moments when it comes to the coaches. Yep. Because there are going to be some guys that are position coaches that want to be coordinators, and coordinators want to be head coaches.
Yep.
And so when you have a lot of good coaches like we do, the chances of keeping that staff, you know, intact in 2025 is not as realistic as it maybe was in 2008.
Well, and I think the big hurdle initially in that was Rashad Samples, the running backs coach, turning down Sam Houston State, or I think it's just Sam Houston University now, early in that process, and said, nope, I'm going to stick around, going to be at Oregon as it is right now. No motion, no shifting on that head coaching front or the – and look, across college football, schools are not paying the buyouts to fire coaches anymore because they know they're going to have to be paying players soon.
Yeah.
And that's a very real thing that schools are doing. So the coaching carousel not as –
Let's talk about it, a gravy train. We're talking about a running back coach at University of Oregon. I mean, we've had some really good ones. You know, Coach Campbell obviously was there forever, but – let's just say, okay, I get to coach the best athletes to do just a couple simple things, right? But just really, a lot of times it's just, hey, you go do cool things with the football, right? I mean, you know, obviously they're reading the defense, they're hitting holes, but, you know, it is, we would always joke where we'd be in long meeting rooms and then the running backs would be in there for a quick 20 minutes. And they like looked at a laser on the wall for a while, you know, worked on their eyes, watched a couple plays, and all right, you just do your thing, boys. And you get that ball and you go find that end zone.
Go be special. Be special.
So, and I would stay at Oregon and coach running backs too.
All right, so let's take a look at the college football playoff championship game. It's coming up next Monday, a week from the release of this podcast. Turns out that Ohio State team, pretty dang good.
Pretty good, wow.
This is the program. The Oregon Ducks ended up losing a tough one in the Rose Bowl to the Ohio State Buckeyes, and as it turns out, that Ohio State team is really dang good. They beat Texas in the Cotton Bowl 28-14, and the defense lived up to the billing yet again, as Jack Sawyer kind of put an exclamation point on that game with Texas driving, looking like they were going to tie the game first and goal from the 1 yard line. And Jack Sawyer ends up on a fourth down, sacking Quinn Ewers, scoop and score for a touchdown, and they end up winning 28-14.
And here's another, you know, fun portal, you know, deal, right? He sacks his former roommate at Ohio State. When Ewan was the incoming freshman, him and Sawyer were roommates, and so he strip sacks his buddy and takes him to the house to secure the win and a trip to the national championship. And I don't know how you felt. I don't know how Oregon felt. People were asking me who I wanted to win. I was like, we got blown out by Ohio State. I don't want to root for Ohio State, but I want them to blow everybody out.
They
need to blow everybody out to make myself feel better.
Yes.
You know, and so when it was 7-0 in the second quarter, I was like, oh, what did we do wrong? You know, and so those are the kind of questions you ask yourself. I mean, Texas obviously has a really good defense, and it was a good matchup, and it was a really close game. And talk about a swing. When you're 14-14 and you got first and goal from the one, and all of a sudden it goes instead of 21-21, it is now 28-14. I mean, just an absolute blow for Texas. But Ohio State's the better team, you know. And when you look at it, I thought it was going to be Penn State Ohio State matchup. You know, Notre Dame, credit to them, you know, with their second half and the way they were able to actually get their offense moving a little bit. Because that was the concern with Notre Dame, right? We know Ohio State is loaded on both sides of the football, right? And I think we are all in consensus that we believe that our side of the bracket had the best teams going forward on both sides, right? And, you know, on paper, you know, I don't know what the spread is. But
it's 8.5. Ohio State, 8.5-point favorites as of Sunday. And that's after the news that Notre Dame's tackle is not going to be playing in the national championship game, and they got another injury question up front on their offensive line as well.
So, yeah, I mean, Ohio State, advantage Ohio State, you know, and we could come back here and eat crow or all the things, but, you know, it's looking like it is Ohio State's year.
Yep.
Notre Dame is going to have a really hard time scoring on them.
I would say so. If Texas had a hard time scoring on him, and Oregon had a hard time scoring on him, and Tennessee had a hard time scoring on him, I don't see how they do move the ball very effectively against this Ohio State defense that is playing at an insane clip right now. And for Oregon, I think you look at it and just the way that game went, you fell into a hole early, you had an inability to run the football, and that seems to be kind of the calling card of this Ohio State team right now through this playoff run is how good their run defense is. And it has been stifling all season long. Texas only ran for 58 yards against this Ohio State defense. Notre Dame, their offense is running the football.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And if you give Ohio State the ability to allow, you know, Lathan Ransom and Caleb Downs to come up and play closer to the line of scrimmage and let the corners on the outside just man you up, it's going to be a long day.
Yeah.
And I am excited for the national championship game. I am on board with, I'm with you. I just hope Ohio State just crushes everybody and you say, hey, you lost to the best team in all of college football. You beat them at one point this year. And I know that's a moral victory, but with the way that Rose Bowl went, I'll take a moral victory at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, looking at the way Notre Dame moves the football, it's, you know, you just said it, right? They're not going to be able to run the ball in Ohio State, and that's all they can do. You know, I think Notre Dame's quarterback got player of the year in the semifinals or maybe the quarterfinals, and he had 90 yards passing. Right. I mean, he does run the ball pretty well, but it is, and I think it's a good story for all those people that want Notre Dame to be back so bad. And it does kind of stick it to Brian Kelly saying that, you know, you can't recruit like at Notre Dame, like you can recruit everywhere.
He wanted to go to a place that could win a national title.
Right? Yes.
Well, there's one team playing for a national title.
Yes. And so he is, you know, it's going to be, you know, when you look at the 12 team playoff, I think we'll look back at it and say we had three good games. You know, we'll call that Texas Ohio State game a good game. We'll absolutely call the Penn State Notre Dame a good game, and then the Arizona State game as well versus Texas. And I think that's it. That's all the only ones you can give us out of all the games. Those were the three that they'll look back and say, "Hey, there were some decent college football games." Because I don't think this national championship is going to be a good one.
Well, everybody always says this, like, "Well, the NFL playoffs are great all the time." At the time of this recording, three games have gone final.
Yeah.
Okay. They've been decided by 14, 20, and 24 points.
Yeah.
It's like in the world of football, the war of attrition, you can put together a great resume, you can put together everything, but the cream rises to the top in playoff football, and oftentimes we do get a lot of blowouts. You just hope it's not the national championship or the Super Bowl.
And the structure should change for us. And we have talked about this last week too, right? You should have some of those best games in that first week when you match them up, and the four best teams are hanging out at home, right, waiting.
Manipulate those matchups.
And then once you manipulate those matchups, then you should have those really good games turned into, like, it should have a trickle down effect in having a really good overall bracket.
Yeah.
And hopefully we learn from that. But, you know, like you said, we're watching some NFL this weekend, and they're not that close because the top teams get the best seeds, and you got two teams sitting at home waiting, and, you know, at least they only have a week off.
And that's where the college football playoff messed it up so much, is that the four best teams were not at home.
Yeah.
They weren't. Well, only one of them was, mm-hmm. because even Georgia may have been SEC champs without Carson Beck. They did not have an offense that could operate. And so the matchups just weren't very good in the opening round, and we all saw that. And it led to, in that quarterfinals, to have a lopsided bracket as well. But that's neither here nor there, because, look, Ohio State, they're playing like the best team in all of college football, and they have an opportunity to prove that next Monday against Notre Dame in the college football playoff national championship game. We'll see.
We'll see. Should be fine. And on another note, too, and a lot of people have been talking about the time off, you know, that they had the rest stuff. Yeah. And we've talked it to death as well. And then people always want to bring up the NFL. Well, the difference with the NFL is it's 1 week.
Yeah.
You know, and you're also used to that because you have a buy built in, right? And we have a buy built in. And so if they really wanted to not give an advantage, if it continues to be that way, where the team that's sitting at home for a month and then has to try to get back to game speed early against a really good team, they probably should shorten that time where you don't have the month off. You know, maybe move college football up a little bit and have more traditional games around New Year's Eve and not playing on January 20th. You know, why can't we move it up? And I know they want to kind of make those groupings just singletons without the other bowls. But guess what? No one cares about the other bowl games, right? Let's move that up. Let's give those teams 2 weeks off, you know, and have another team 1 week off. Let's have the national championship around January 1st to 8th in that world, you know.
January 1st at the Rose Bowl every year.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, talk about a cool spot. I mean, the Rose Bowl's still standing. You know, my Airbnb that I stayed at down there for the Rose Bowl is no longer standing.
No way.
Yeah, the entire neighborhood that we stayed at is absolutely gone. You know,
that is heartbreaking.
Yeah,
man.
We went for a walk before the game, or for a run, or whatever. Just checked it all out. We look back; it is wiped out.
Oh,
so just a crazy time. But you know, on a side note, like there can be some changes where there isn't just this team sitting home, you know, twiddling their thumbs, getting prepared. I get it. We're, you know, prepared, but you can only prepare for so long. Like, give me 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah.
You know, like then it just starts to become work, mm-hmm. right? You know, let's keep the rhythm going. But that's something I was thinking about because I feel like a lot of people are talking about it. And a lot of people like to compare to the NFL. Well, you know, NFL is condensed down in the reasonable amount of time where you never have more than a week off, just like with the Super Bowl, right? You know, you have an extra week to prepare because after 2 weeks, then that rust might start creeping a little bit more. And if you're not on the same playing field where one team has caught back up and then all of a sudden you're just hitting the mouth early, next thing you know, you're down 31-0 and trying to figure it out.
Changes things really quickly.
So.
All right, we will get back to our interviews. We are having them scheduled. Is it coming out of the new year? Everybody's schedule is all up in the air. So we are going to get back to our interviews. We're going to get an interview. We're going to take a look at the defense and the special teams in the coming weeks. And, of course, the coaching staff as well. As we go through our off-season procedures here on the program podcast. But thank you all for listening to us. And listen to us, even though it was a tough Rose Bowl game, we weren't sure what the listenership would be like after the Rose Bowl game. Turns out y'all came back. So thank you for listening, continuing to spread the word, and we will see you next week on the program.
Go Ducks.